Hello and welcome to Film Potpourri Sandwich Deluxe.
I'm Richard Nicholas, and with me today are
Bane,
King Tut,
and Anthony Evans.
Yeah. What's the film today, King Tut? You picked it.
The film this week is 1990's The Hunt for Red October.
And who's in it, Bane?
It stars Sean Connery, Alec Baldwin, Sam Neill, and then I could keep going because there's quite a large cast, but I think only those three guys really are in it a lot.
Yeah, so who wrote and directed and whatnot?
It is directed by John McTiernan, the man who brought you Die Hard, and it's based on a novel by Tom Clancy.
The man who brought me Die Hard was just an Amazon delivery guy.
That was Tom McTiernan.
My goodness. And he actually delivers them all by hand, does he?
Yeah.
I'm being facetious, sorry. We should talk about what we were expecting of this film, should we?
Yes, we should tell people what it's about, maybe.
Oh, it's about submarines and whatnot. Who cares?
Submarines, political espionage.
It's about the reincarnated Egyptian pharaoh.
No, that's you.
So what is the film about? If it's not about submarines, what is it about?
It's about Sean Connery being a Russian
commander. Russian.
Yeah, Russian commander who defects to the United States.
To United States, is that good grammar?
To the United States in a stolen submarine which has a revolutionary silent engine.
Oh, spoilers, by the way. That's the whole thing. Go on, carry on. Yeah, no, that's it. Right, good.
Alec Baldwin is a CIA man?
Yes.
Who recognises that he's trying to defect.
And not blow up the USA.
And tries to facilitate it for him.
Yeah.
From his end.
So, Ollie, you picked it. Sorry, King Tut, or whatever continuity we're supposed to be using. I'll call you Ollie and King Tut whenever I remember which one's the right one.
Okay.
Why did you pick this for us this week? No reason? No reason at all. Just picked it.
I picked it because we have had a surfeit of Sean Connery, and I really needed a movie where he would mangle all the S sounds into almost incomprehensibility.
Which is pretty much any film he's ever been in.
Yes. Occasionally he tries, but pretty often. But
that's the worst point. When he tries is when it's really bad. Like in, what's the one with the guns?
With the one with the guns?
Untouchables?
Untouchables.
Yeah.
Isn't he? He's an Irish cop. He's an Irish cop who sounds Scottish in that, isn't he?
He's like, he tries doing an Irish and he just kind of gives up halfway through the film. At least here he's stuck with Scottish.
Top of the morning to you. Hosh, 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 hosh. Actually, I don't know what that was. Hosh, hosh, hosh is not Sean Connery. But hello. That's how he sounds to me.
Anyway, this is I like this movie because it's really one of the last proper thrillers before all thrillers became action movies.
Yeah, there's not a lot of driving off cliffs on bikes and explosions and... Mm.
Yeah, mostly because they're in submarines. But
there's no parkour in this submarine movie.
Anyway, on the Connery list, here we are on the Connery list, and he's playing a Scottish Lithuanian.
Who's a naturalised Russian.
As opposed to a Scottish Spaniard, a Scottish Irish person, a Scottish James Bond, or...
I can't help you out of films too.
Any of the others.
Right. Has anyone seen this before?
Yes.
No, I've never seen this before.
Abby, you've seen it before. What did you think? Were you looking forward to it this time round or what?
I saw it a very long time ago. The only thing I could really remember was that it's quite long.
Right. when I saw the trailer, I hadn't seen it before either. It looked rather dull to me. The trailer did not really sell it, but I was game for a bit of Connery-age. Sorry, did I cut you off?
No, it's fine.
Well, by modern standards, it's not that long. Lord of the Rings really raised the standard on what long movies are.
Yes.
The fact that you remember it as being long probably meant that you remember it being boring.
Maybe. I was quite young at the time, and this isn't really for kids.
Yeah.
Not that there's adult stuff that happens. It's just, it's about politics and the Cold War.
Yes, you have to be Saul to understand what the Cold War was about.
I was surprised by that. I was expecting a bit more action, especially because it was John McTiernan, who we know is quite good at action. And there was a lot of political intrigue in this film, which I wasn't expecting. But that's not a bad thing. I did enjoy the film.
Yeah. I don't know. Like I say, I wasn't looking forward to it particularly, but I was going to give it a chance. So what happened in the film? How did we react to it? Shall we just go through the plot? Am I doing the podcast correctly, or have I done something wrong again?
I think we can go through the plot exactly, because a lot of it is about tension.
Yeah. But, you know, we should. Otherwise, there's no, oh, well, we're just done then. Like, we're not going to talk about it.
We'll be selective about it.
Okay. Well, someone kick us off somewhere then.
Well, the first major plot point is Sean Connery stealing the submarine. And he kills a guy and changes the order for the ship.
Oh, that's right. That's right. He's just one of the crew, isn't he?
He's the political officer, so he's essentially the communist representative.
And there's a scene where he's like, what are you doing in my office? And then that's it. We have that nice moment where we transfer from... They're speaking Russian initially. They pan in on the guy, and suddenly he switches from speaking Russian to English. We pan out, and it's as if we've been translated...
Yeah,
already.
I quite like that as a little thing.
Yeah, the director sort of pops a babelfish in your ear at that point, and you start understanding what's going on. Unless you don't get that reference, then you're lost in podcasting.
I was fine with that until right at the end when they all got together and then they were all speaking English. But we'll get to that.
It is a bit weird. So yeah, that guy. There's a guy in Sean Connery's room, and he's like a bit annoyed, and then. He opens the safe, doesn't he? And gets out...
Their actual orders.
And the guy who is killed by Sean Connery just... I mean, what...
He's not annoyed. He's the political officer. He's actually quite proud of the mission.
I think he meant Sean Connery was annoyed.
Oh, okay. Then, yes, he was annoyed.
Yeah, because Sean Connery's plan is to take over, and he does this by just brutally murdering the guy in charge.
Or, if you believe... Sean's defence, he fell over.
How did he kill him?
He fell over and broke his neck.
Did he just grab his face and sort of snap his neck weirdly? Or
he smashed his forehead into a table, I think.
Classic. Yeah. Like that'll look like an accident, definitely. So then he burns the orders they have and replaces them with his own duplicate, which is to pop over to the USA and do a missile test there. Is that the crux of what his plan
is? It's a fake... test mission. He tells them that they're going to be engaging with their own ships, I think, but in a different territory to usual, so off the grid, as it were.
Right. But if anyone does smell a fish, they go along with it anyway, don't they, the plan?
Because he's the commander.
Tim Curry comes in at this point, doesn't he? And he's like, do you think we should have the other key that can launch the nuclear missiles? Do you think I should have it because only one? And Sean Connery's like, no, I'll keep both keys, thank you, Kim Curry.
Yeah, because Tim Curry's the ship's doctor, and as the other high-ranking officer, he's meant...
Yeah.
Sean Connery isn't allowed to have both nuclear keys.
Because he can do nuclear stuff, isn't he? And that's bad.
And, you know, he used to be an MI6 agent, so he can't really be trusted.
I was so pleased when Tim Curry came on screen. Yes. And then I was really disappointed, because he wasn't being Tim Curry, he was being a normal guy.
Yeah, that was disappointing.
When you see Tim Curry in a film, you go, your ears prick up, and you're like, yes, something's going to get interesting. But like, this is the only film where it doesn't happen.
He doesn't dress in drag. He doesn't overpronounce his vowels. He doesn't pull funny faces. Nothing.
No,
he just sort of looks a bit worried every now and again, and is told to shush or locked out of a meeting.
Yeah,
and that's about it. So it was a bit of a disappointing
bad use of Tim Curry in your film.
Inexcusable. Really.
Was that before he was known to be Tim Curry?
I don't think
so. No, because Rocky Horror's from like the 70s.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so to explain things a little bit more, Sean Connery is playing Captain Ramius, and all of his officers, except the Doctor, are in on this plan, but his crew isn't. So his officers know what he's planning to do.
And are loyal to him.
And are loyal, except the Doctor.
Yeah.
Tim Curry.
But he's locked out of the rooms that they're in.
He's coincidentally or semi-suspiciously locked out of every secret meeting they have. And that's one strand. And the other strand is Alec Baldwin as the CIA guy. And the movie is basically two parallel stories going on.
Yeah.
He's Jack Ryan, who I recently came to understand is there's a bunch of different movies based on Tom Clancy's novels. And it's the same Jack Ryan in all of them, only it's been a different actor each time.
Yes.
So this is one of those.
Yeah, it's the first Jack Ryan film, I think. Yes.
Right.
It's weird. I don't know much about this character.
The same character in Clear and Present Danger, The Sum of All Fears, Patriot Games.
See, this is why I don't know this character. I haven't seen any of those films. Okay, no worries.
Well, this is the character's first outing, and he is Alec Baldwin.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't have that much of a backstory other than... Oh, the only backstory he gets is he has a daughter who wants to have a brother bought for her, or a brother bought for her teddy bear. That's the only backstory I remember from it.
And he's married to Beverly
from Beverly Star Trek Crusher from Star Trek.
Do we see her?
Very briefly, right at the start. It's why both me and Nancy went, ah, look, it's you!
That happened throughout the film, though. It's like, oh, that guy. This is a that guy film. It is packed
even
with them.
Even a that girl film.
Yeah.
So we meet Alec Baldwin, playing Jack, whatever his name is, and he is basically brought onto this case involving submarines. Do they call it cases in the CIA? I don't even know how it works.
Well, he's investigating some photos, some intel photos that he's had from a submarine with suspicious holes in it.
Okay,
which
yeah.
Then they figure out is a silent propulsion system.
Yeah, cool.
Which means that their submarines could not be detected underwater.
Yeah.
And then it turns out that Sean Connery is driving that boat.
Uh-oh, a very clever Russian spy is... What's the spy? Russian submarine commander is in charge of a very stealthy, big, nuclear-capable submarine. We better sort this out in case they bomb us and stuff, because... If they get too close, we won't be able to stop them.
So there's a bit with Jack Ryan and I think... Did he meet the president or was it the Secretary of State?
He met Darth Vader, didn't he?
No. When he went to that big meeting with all of the...
The president's...
Was it president?
The president's national security advisor.
Yeah.
Right.
Some dudes in suits.
Well, either way, it's all about... They understand that there is a...
Potential threat.
Threat out there. And Jack Ryan is the only one who can... kind of tell that no, he's not coming to attack, he's coming to defect.
Yeah,
but so he has to kind of prove that to everyone with his CIA skills.
The NSA, the national security guy rather, gives him 3 days, I think it is, to prove that he's defecting. After that they blow up the boat if he hasn't managed to do it.
Yeah, because basically in the Cold War times everyone's a bit like, the Russians are very suspicious of the Americans are very suspicious of the Russians, and one of them's going to attack the other one, whether it's innocent or not. And, oh no, we're going to have World War III. So that's basically what's at jeopardy here. And luckily for us, there's Alec Baldwin to the rescue. Hooray. So he is continuing to investigate this, while Sean Connery is slowly dealing with problems of his own. Would you say that's where we're sort of getting to in the film?
Hmm.
What's the first sort of dramatic problem that Connery has to manoeuvre around in his submarine then, guys?
Well, sort of a creeping thing that he has to do is to arrange for a way for the crew to get off the submarine because they can't defect or they won't want to defect.
Yeah.
So he needs them to go, but he needs them to go of their own accord and willingly.
Yeah, so that's...
So he sets up a series of things. Ollie's raised his hand. I don't know if it's because he wants to ask a question or if he's just a bit stiff.
No, the first thing is that he sent a letter to the...
Yes, you're right.
The Russian chief admiral, and he's announced that they're defecting so that his officers can't change their mind, and so it actually happens. And as a result... The Red October is being hunted by both the Russians and the Americans.
Yes.
Yeah. But because of the stealthy hole things that Anthony mentioned, it's very hard to find this submarine because it's basically silently moving across the sea. Oh, no. Yeah, but, like, I mean, that's the setup, is they've got... We're kind of wondering how he's going to get his officers to get off the ship. But they sort of deal with more tangible threats first of, like, rocks that they have to steer around and whatnot. And that we sort of begin a trend of having to turn right at the very last minute and avoid hitting the thing.
Mm.
Would you agree?
Well, yeah, that was to avoid nuclear missiles from... I can't remember if it was the Russians or the Americans.
Was it?
torpedoes.
They are under attack from the Russians.
Torpedoes, so why was there a rock peril?
He was going so deliberately close to the rocks so that when he turned, it would hit the rock and not continue to follow them.
Was that later on? I thought there was one before that where they had to turn right to avoid collision.
Well, that's just navigating through the underwater channel. And there's sabotage as well at some point.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They have to deal with...
A saboteur.
A saboteur who is doing stuff to sort of stop them defecting, I guess. How does the saboteur... I mean, we all know who it is. I mean, it's the cook, weirdly. Like an Agatha Christie movie, Agatha Christie. It's the cook who did it. He's the saboteur who we briefly meet at the start. And...
He just takes things out of the engine, fiddles with some wiring, just mucks about things.
I think he disables the silent propulsion after a while. So then they're kind of...
They have to go onto regular engines.
Yeah.
So that they're... Hoping they won't get caught, but obviously...
To amp up the tension.
So this cook is a proud Russian who is on to them? How do we find out how the cook knows to sabotage them or what he...
Well, the Soviet regime was quite a paranoid one, so you'll have the official political officer who is the company guy, and then there'll be a second one who's keeping an eye on things undercover.
And the cook, along with the doctor, but were brought in because they were there to show that Sean Connery was keeping the key. He had to officially show someone that he was keeping the key. The doctor piped up about that, and it could be that the cook was deeply suspicious of that and knew that you were not supposed to do that.
I think we're filling in a lot of blanks for this movie, but I'll let this slide. I mean, sure, that he could have been aware, he could have been an internal spy. For whatever reason, the cook is revealed to be the
guy who threw the Stroganoff on the invisible mushroom drive.
Yes, what? That's exactly what he is.
Oh, I have trouble with clarity at the best of times, so now I'm completely confused.
Oh, I'm really, really...
Yes, okay.
What? What's going on?
Because Ollie's not well. He's extra not making sense today.
Also, this is such a rambling podcast. We're going all over
the place. I was trying to suggest that we go through it in order, and then we're so talking about the end bits when I was just trying to allude to like the submarine avoiding some rocks at the start.
But that's
point.
Just the way that... I think Sean Connery's deliberately gone that way so that it's difficult for him to be followed. Even though he's got the silent engine, he's not counting on the silent engine. He's going away, that's also difficult.
Yeah, so one of the other problems they have is that the silent engine fails due to the saboteur, and they get spotted briefly, and then, oh no, they can be bombed by, you know, either Americans or the Russians. And we've also got the threat of the Americans searching... This is a hard one to sort of piece together the bits because there's just lots of mini threats, isn't
it? Yeah, that's the thing. It's all about... It's a thriller, so it's all about those little things. Like, one person discovers something. What does that mean for the rest of the plot? And then you cut to something else, and then it's like, ooh, this is happening. What does this mean? And then it all converges towards the end, you know? Mm. It's like you can't really pick up little things like that. So maybe we should be talking about it in a more broader sense.
Okay, yeah.
The only other bit I want to bring up particularly is that there is one American ship that is onto silent submarine because their sonar guy has picked up on some clues as to how to follow it.
By pure chance.
Yeah, this is one of the main, like, kind of first things the Americans have to get over is finding a silent submarine. And like you say, they introduce the American team and basically they focus on, like, a sonar guy who is... trying out a crazy theory that what is actually volcano-related noise isn't volcano-related noise at all. It's actually rhythmic noises from a submarine. And it turns out that it is and stuff, and we can totally find the Russians. Hooray, we snuck up on them. And, of course, Russian submarines are like all submarines, and you can't hear stuff with the sonar when you're behind them. Is that one of the tropes of the submarine?
Propellers wreck... water's ability to transport sound. So if you're behind the propellers, then the disturbance the propellers make, it wrecks your ability to find them just by listening. If you wanted to ping them with active sonar, then you could still find them.
So essentially, we've got a rather filmically exciting bit where the Americans have latched on to the Russians and have snuck up behind her in the bit where the sonar can't hear and stuff.
Yeah.
and they're sneaking up like a little fish on a shark or something. And that's kind of one of the more dramatic areas of the film. And yeah, we have more of a physical confrontation at this point.
Mm. So where do you think we should go next? You said we should talk about this.
Okay, let's cover all the little things. Just throw them in the bin and talk about the whole movie as a thing, I reckon.
Mm.
Are there any little bits that we didn't deal with or haven't awkwardly mentioned already?
There's the Russian ambassador is talking to the national security guy off and on, making excuses for what's going on, threading in some lies, that kind of thing. So there's that going on. And then what's his name? Stellan Skarsgård being the crazy, sweating, smoking Russian in one of the Russian submarines trying to seek out Sean Connery's submarine. We go back to them every now and again, and he's like, I will follow them to the end of the earth!
Yeah, he has almost no character other than he's lit in various colours and smokes and sweats, and is presumably a bad guy. The movie just kind of decides that Russian, he's a bad Russian because he wants to stop someone defecting.
He's on the Russian submarine full of people who sound like Russians, while Sean Connery's on the Russian submarine full of people who don't sound like Russians and who are the ones who are defecting.
Yeah. This is something that's a bit morally weird about the film. Sean Connery is being a villain because he's defecting. I mean, that's bad, right? Defecting from your country, you should be loyal. It's not like the Russians were wrong or anything. They were just the other side of the, you know, problem.
Well, he was upset because a silent nuclear missile carrying submarine really only has one purpose. And it's basically designed to be a first strike.
So Sean Connery's trying to say, oh, look, guys, we shouldn't take war this seriously. Let's not kill everyone over it.
Yeah, that's why he's defecting.
Okay, so the Russians are sort of bad guys because
they want to destroy the world.
We want our awesome submarine that could totally ruin the Americans' day. I just, what annoys me a little bit is they kill some of the Russians. Sean Connery sneakily gets, like, the Russians killed by the classic thing of getting what's the missile called again?
Torpedo.
Well, I can't remember that word. Sean Connery's getting chased by a torpedo from the Russian sub, and he magically does enough of a turn so that it misses him and hits the Russians, and oh no, a submarine of like Russians is killed. But I don't see them as being that terrible. I mean, they were just trying to stop a guy getting away from their army and stealing their boat. You know.
Well, it was designed to start a nuclear war which would have killed billions of people.
Yeah, but the Russians were just being the Russian army. They weren't definitely using this submarine straight away.
They didn't spell that out in terms of the film. Because you know stuff, but there are people who might not necessarily have known that.
I only know it from the film.
But in the film, it wasn't like on the Russian speaking Russians boat. If you see, like, it wasn't like I must get my hands on the nuclear submarine so we can bomb the American dogs. It was we must stop Connery because he's trying to get away from us, isn't it?
No, the crazy Russian captain is especially mad at Sean Connery because he has a special place in his heart for him as his teacher. Because
Sean Connery taught the entire Navy, apparently. It's basically what they spelled out for us in the film.
Yeah, I don't know. I felt a bit of sympathy for the boat full of Russians that died, or submarine.
It's good that you feel a bit of sympathy for them.
I feel bad.
You're a humanitarian.
They weren't proper villains. They need to be proper evil to be destroyed.
Well, no, I guess like the politicians and the government were the real villains because they were the ones constantly trying to hide things from each other.
I suppose. They were being rather cloak and daggery.
Mm.
But they didn't explode in a submarine at sea. I just feel sorry. That's all. I'm just saying.
Aww.
So, no. Are there any other little incidents that happened that we can?
Just like the end, I guess. It's just how the Americans discover that he's defecting, and then they have to make it look like he has been killed and the ship has been destroyed, rather than being reclaimed by the Americans.
Yeah, I guess. So all of the little sabotages don't amount to much other than a bit of tension, and then someone solving the problem or being delayed slightly.
And there's a gunfight in the nuclear missile storage space, and Alec Baldwin does a Connery impression, and is that it?
What do you mean that's it? We're not shutting this shop yet. There's so much to talk about from Alec Baldwin's side of things. We haven't even mentioned the tenuous investigation he does, where he finds out all kinds of things and makes assumptions.
There was a lot of assumptions, especially he kept saying, I know this guy, I met him once.
And I read his like, books and
hold
stuff.
On.
I wrote the hold book on. This guy. He wrote the book on him. He wrote the bio.
I know what he's thinking at every turn. I figured out this really weird planted effect by looking like you're going to attack.
And once or twice, he did guess stuff. He turned out to be right. And he still told people, yeah, that was a guess. I just needed you to trust me.
Yeah. He's a miracle worker, is Alec Baldwin. He really does guess things wildly and prove himself right again and again throughout this film. And they throw him into...
He goes from the United States and his White House briefings to an aircraft carrier, to the ship that's following them, to a little submersible ship, a little rescue ship that is his friend's submarine that can dock with any submarine. Then into the nuclear submarine where he meets Sean Connery.
Well, he has to get there via a horrible, choppy helicopter ride, which is kind of a subplot for Alec Baldwin. He has a thing with turbulence, and he doesn't like it.
It's kind of a thing for John McTiernan.
What do you mean?
Well, in Die Hard, he doesn't like to fly. In this, he doesn't like to fly. Isn't there a bear thing in Die Hard as well?
A bear thing?
There's a teddy bear in Die Hard.
Oh, a teddy bear? I don't know, like they fight bears or something.
Oh, there's one in the limo at the end, isn't there? No.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. No. There's planes and teddy bears. John McTiernan is nuts for trains, planes and teddy bears.
Yeah.
Based on two films of his that I've seen and none of the others.
It's a crackpot theory, but it's a crackpot film, so that's okay. Yeah, I'm just saying, like, he gets over his fear of turbulence by constantly being put in horrible vehicles that have a lot of shaking and wobbling, like submarines and helicopters. And at one point is dropped in the sea for dramatic effect. It was kind of... I mean... We knew he was going to get on the submarine, but it was all right. Those moments where he dealt with the horrible transport he was on was good, I suppose.
There was a guy who was supposed to catch Alec Baldwin, as it were, as he was trying to get onto the submarine
from the helicopter. Yeah.
Did we find out if that guy was all right?
Yeah,
he
sort of fell off
really hard.
He's probably fine. It's just a concussion. He probably had to walk it off.
We don't care about the extras.
Yeah, who cares? Aww. He's just some guy.
I shed blood for this movie.
So after Alec Baldwin's guessing and figuring stuff out, he's dropped off to have the confrontation in real life, because obviously it's Hollywood, you can't have them separate all the time. They've got to meet each other in real life and look in each other's eyes. Alec Baldwin's let in, and the Americans who have been following the Russians eventually hook up as well. They sort of... Does Alec Baldwin get there the same time as the American? I mean, how did it work out that they were also American submarine guys and Alec Baldwin in the same place?
The rescue sub hooked up with the American submarine. Then Alec Baldwin and the captain, because, you know, he had a vested interest in this now, and the sonar guy went with him so they could fully explain the situation and get everyone up to speed and...
What I mean is, like, Alec Baldwin is dropped off by helicopter, and then the American submarine kind of latches on to the Russian one after they do...
No.
Alec Baldwin is dropped off onto the American submarine.
Oh yeah. Sorry, I'm being idiot. I was imagining being dropped off into the Russian submarine. Yes. You're right, I'm sorry.
Give me a ping, Rossilli.
Yeah, we have a lovely moment of ping conversation... And what's that called when you flash a light?
Morse code.
Morse code between the Russians and the American subs, so that they basically communicate with each other and say, don't hurt us, we're not going to fire our torpedoes at you, just stay there. And then Sean Connery's like, oh no, and let them in and stuff. Right, guys? Am I right? And then they latch on to each other, and the captain, Alec Baldwin, and the sonar guy get on the Russian sub.
No.
No, at this point... We know that Alec Baldwin has a plan, and that he's somehow communicated it over, but we don't know what it is. And that plan is to make it all look like the Red October has been destroyed.
Yeah.
But also, you know, get everyone off, but make sure that Sean Connery dead. So then they rendezvous somewhere else, get a fake nuclear accident inside the submarine, get all the crew off, and then Sean Connery like goes, oh, there's a boat over there. You all go away, and I'll go and blow it up. And they're like, yes, sir. We'll give you an Iron Cross for this. So he goes off, and then they pretend to blow up the submarine, but they don't.
The bit you're missing out is that Alec Baldwin's friend has his little rescue submarine that can connect with any submarine, and that's the one they use to get Alec Baldwin onto the silent running submarine, yes, yes. So that the American submarine can go and distract the Russian crew somewhere else.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. Right, I'm caught up. I watched this and I'm remembering it badly. But yeah, we had to, like we mentioned earlier, we figured out how to dispatch the officers, and that was to pretend there was a nuclear leak, and send them to the surface in rafts, and leave Curry with his nice hat, looking worried on a raft this time. So yeah, we get to this exciting conclusion where Alec Baldwin and the captain and the sonar guy face off against Connery and his men. And what do you know, if the saboteur hasn't reared his ugly cook head again and whips out a gun and starts shooting people. Oh.
Wait, I want to go...
You know what's really strange is the fact that they will have done a roll call when they were getting all the crew off. Mm. And they will have noticed that the cook isn't on one of the people on the raft.
Well, they made it a point of saying, make sure you count everyone, yeah? And obviously someone didn't count properly.
But what are they going to do?
Get him
Cook's
out.
Not here. It's too late now.
It's not too late.
It is too late if Sean Connery's gotten back in the submarine and closed the door before he's finished.
I think also Sean Connery had to get away quickly because he was going to take a torpedo for the greater good of everyone or something.
He was going to take the submarine down and scuttle it so that nobody... He was claiming he was going to take the Red October underwater and then blow it up so nobody could get it.
Hmm. So there was sort of a rush. So if the cook is still in the submarine, oh well, I guess is the attitude.
I want to go back to what Anthony mentioned earlier about the accents, yeah. About speaking English where they all finally meet each other.
Yeah,
you had something to say.
I was fine. I was fine with it. Because, you know, you have American films. You have American films set in France, like Three Musketeers. Everyone has American accents. That's fine. Here, it's fine. They do the little trick where it's like, oh, even though we know they're still speaking Russian, we can hear it as English. But then when they converge and Sean Connery is then actually speaking English to the English people,
yeah.
And he has a Scottish accent, it just doesn't work anymore.
There should be a language barrier. And they should really have some trouble speaking to Sean Connery. But luckily, Alec Baldwin speaks Russian, along with knowing everything about Sean Connery.
Well, it's not that bad that Connery can speak English, because he's a top submarine commander and he will be the best of the best, and he will almost have been required to be able to speak English.
That's not my problem. My problem is that the systems have clashed.
So you'd rather they go back to speaking Russian at this point and then speaking broken English to each other?
Yeah, at least making it broken English. Anyway, I guess it's a minor point. You see Sean Connery, you know he's going to have a Scottish accent.
Yeah, I guess.
No matter who he is.
Only three of them really speak English. There's Connery, there's Sam Neill, and the engineer guy speaks some dodgy English.
I love that engineer. I don't think there's an engineer in any film I don't like.
Doesn't he just do a bit of, like, he's just fiddling with stuff on a ladder mainly?
Yeah, he's up a ladder, sort of hunched over most
of
the time.
A bit stressed because he has to fix things that
smoking,
are nuclear.
Smoking, spanner.
And that's another thing. If Sean Connery isn't doing a Russian accent, but everyone else is kind of trying to do a Russian accent on the sub, like Sam Neill had a kind of Russian accent, and so did Tim Curry, and so did everyone else.
Oh, his speech about Montana.
Well, this is the thing that ties in with the saboteur. To move on, I mean, you know, we can discuss whether you should use an accent or not in a drama that's by Americans or not. But
just keep it consistent. That's all I want. Yeah, consistency in my life. I need it in my films as well.
So okay, the plot continues along with your guy who loves Montana. Now, we establish that one of Sean Connery's loyal men would love to go to Montana and drive a truck and raise rabbits.
Have a wife who would help him raise rabbits and then cook them for him.
Yeah.
A fat wife.
Fat American wife.
That's his American dream, is to have this wife cooking rabbits, driving his truck in Montana that he's heard so much about. He loves Montana. It's always in the films, isn't it, Montana?
Driving from state
classic.
To state.
But the thing is... It's one of those speeches where you know it's like,
You just signed your death warrant for that speech.
Yeah. And if he isn't the only person who gets killed by the saboteur, yeah, he gets shot in the gunfire that ensues. And of course, he dies. Poor guy. He only wanted to live in Montana.
He only wanted some character development.
Yeah. You could have shot any of the extras. What about guy who already fell off the top of the submarine? He was injured already. But no. So... basically what transpires then is Alec Baldwin has to be the one to confront this guy. Why does that happen? Why is it Alec
Baldwin? Connery gets shot.
Yeah, Connery. Oh, yeah, Connery's shot as well, but he doesn't. He's
he
fine.
Doesn't die. He's just like, oh, my shoulder. And then after the cook's been killed, he's like, oh, really, I'm fine. I just didn't want to deal with that situation.
So Alec Baldwin has a kind of exciting showdown with this guy. He sort of chases after him in a sort of wet bit that's lit in red and sort of climbs on stuff and tracks him down and eventually gets his man, does he?
Yes.
Sort of kills him.
Yes, he's like, you're the cook, and then shoots him.
You have a ladle.
Amidst all the nuclear missile silos.
Yes, in all the most dangerous bit to shoot bullets, but don't worry about it, it's a film. So yeah, then this is kind of getting to the end game bit, I suppose, where they successfully pretended that Connery's been blown up. Do they? They you know.
Yeah, the Russian crew by the ship's been sunk. They're all standing in their little rafts, going. Oh, I saluted everyone. I just realised I did a gesture on radio. That's a faux pas.
All the Russians who are on their rafts salute the blown up submarine, which actually is one of their other Russian submarines that was blown up. Oh well.
They blew up Skarsgård.
Skarsgård?
Stellan Skarsgård.
Who's that?
Crazy sweaty Russian.
Oh, that's his name. That's the actor's name.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Poor. And they all live happily ever after.
And Sean Connery gets the fish and stuff, because that's the only thing he really mentions. That
Sean Connery and Alec Baldwin bond.
They bond.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it.
And they basically show up on the shore and go, let's go fish and stuff. Hooray. That right? Have we nailed everything? I mean, it's been a shambles, and I blame myself. But, you know, we've covered some bits of the film.
Ollie, what did you think of the movie overall? Wake up. Mm-hmm. Or I can come back to you at the end.
The movie... Ask again.
Ollie, what did you think of the movie overall?
I like it. It's a bit long, but it doesn't have much action, and I don't really like action that much, so it's a good thriller. And also, it's practically Alec Baldwin's only good film role.
Beetlejuice.
Did you say ninjas?
Beetlejuice.
Right.
Oh. Is he in Beetlejuice? Yes, he's in Beetlejuice. Ooh, Beetlejuice.
Other than that, though, it's pretty dire.
People seem to like him in 30 Rock.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Well, that's television. TV.
Do you want to grade it?
On a torpedoes that have just missed out of 10.
Right, on a Soviet leader scale.
Soviet leader, Stalin.
I'll call that a Gorbachev.
What does that mean? These scoring get more and more diluted into weirdness every week. Okay, a Gorbachev out of Russian leaders, right, Abby?
I like this film too. It's you have to care about the Cold War a bit in order to enjoy it. But
it's not one of the most exciting things in history, the Cold War, but it is memorable because it was recent.
Well, actually, communism. This actually just a few months after the release, or even near the end of filming, communism finally broke down, and the downfall of the Soviets and the Cold War actually happened in real life during this movie.
Ooh, that's awesome.
So in many ways, we can probably thank Red October for inspiring the Cold War to come to an end.
But as I was saying, I like it. You have to care about the Cold War to want to watch it. But there's some good turns. It's there's the odd thing that sticks out a bit, like Sam Neill's Montana speech. That is a bit. Oh, you had to spoil it, didn't you? You had to spell that bit out in crayon. But other than that, it's good. I don't know enough Russian leaders to be able to
call it a Khrushchev.
A Khrushchev. Yeah. I'm going to give it a Khrushchev.
You can't get secret help. You have to pick your own Russian or communist leader.
I've made my choice.
I'm still none the wiser on what you thought of it then. I mean, I get what you're saying, but the score is ununderstandable. Anthony, what are your thoughts on Red October?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Going in, I thought, the same as you, it kind of looked a bit dull.
Hmm.
And submarine films tend to be all about, you know, the tension and claustrophobia of being trapped. But no, this was like a lot wider. This had a scope between the Russians and Americans.
There was no flooding as well. There's usually flooding in all underwater-based dramas.
That's true. It was a good thriller. When there was action, it was good.
Sure.
Some good turns. Alec Baldwin was okay. Sean Connery does what Sean Connery does. Yeah. Bit underused Tim Curry.
You have to accept a lot with this movie, don't you?
Yeah. And like, there's a couple of logical steps which Alec Baldwin takes where you're like,
does that really quite make sense?
But no, I think it's a solid film.
So what scale do you want to use? Pick anyone. Anything vaguely.
Anyone Russian. I'll go with Stalin then.
that means it's excellent.
How do we grade? Is it the worse the dictator or leader? The better the score or the more famous? Or
no, I think actually you choose the leader with the personality that most matches the movie.
Right.
I think you're overestimating Lenin. How many Russians we know.
Oh, then I will go with Lenin because The Hunt for October was named after the October Revolution, which was started by Lenin.
Which leaves rich.
Intellect.
Which leaves rich with having to make the fourth choice of Russian leader.
I could always pick the same one as you guys. Who could agree? Well, you know, it is silly. It's very Hollywood. It's kind of, you have to accept early on that it's going to take a little liberties for the sake of drama and thrills rather than be like a convincing submarine movie. So, I don't know. I was a little bored at times, but they have plenty of moments that if you're not enjoying for the thrill, you're laughing at because of Sean Connery's-ness or Alec Baldwin's conclusion jumping and stuff. So, you know, I think it's okay, but I didn't love it, so I'm going to give it Russian doll instead of a leader.
Okay.
Maybe. Oh, okay. I'll rank it in terms of deer stalkers. It was 7 deer stalkers out of 10.
Excellent. Good. Job well done.
So that's been the shambles. That was the Red October chat, and we'll see you next time for hopefully a film we can sum up a lot easier and keep track of.
Oh, yes, yes. And of course, give me a ping, Rossilli. One ping only.
Only one ping, because if two pings means bomb us, so we don't want that.
One ping.
Bung, bung, bung.
Bye.
Wait, that was 3 pings. No!